Saha Saptabihi with seven. Shatahai 100. Ekaha alone. Vimshatcha with 20. Cha also. Shatam 100. Samaha years. Paranjana of King Paranjana. Pura Adyakshaha, superintendent of the city. Gandharvahe, with the Gandharvas. Yuyute, fought. Bare, very valiant. So translation, the five-hooded serpent, the superintendent and protector of the city of King Paranjana, fought with the Gandharvas for 100 years. He fought alone with all of them, although they numbered 720. You repeat, the five-hooded serpent.
The five-hooded serpent.
The superintendent and protector.
The superintendent and protector.
Of the city of King Paranjana.
Of the city of King Paranjana.
Fought with the Gandharvas.
Fought with the Gandharvas.
For 100 years.
For 100 years.
He fought alone.
With all of them,
although they numbered 720. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda Ki Jai. The 360 days and 360 nights combined to become the 720 soldiers of Chandravega time. One has to fight these soldiers throughout one's lifespan, beginning with birth and ending with death. This fight is called the struggle for existence. Despite this struggle, however, the living entity does not die. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter, text 20, the living entity is eternal. Najayate mrite va kadachin doyam bhutva bhavata va nabhuyaha ajo nitya sashvato yam purano nahanyate hanyamane shatire. For the soul, there is never birth nor death, nor having once been, does he ever cease to be. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, undying, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. Actually, the living entity does not take birth, nor does he die. But he has to fight with the stringent laws of material nature throughout the entire span of his lifetime. He must also face different kinds of miserable conditions. Despite all this, the living entity, due to illusion, thinks that he is well situated in sense gratification. Actually, I want to read the next verse along with this because it's very similar. Text 17. Shiyamane swasambande kasmin bahubir yuda chintam param jakamartya sarashtra purabandhavaha. Because he had to fight alone with so many soldiers, all of whom were great warriors, the serpent with five hoods became very weak. Seeing that his most intimate friend was weakening, King Paranjana and his friends and citizens living within the city all became very anxious. So purport again. The living entity resides within the body and struggles for existence with the limbs of the body, which are referred to here as citizens and friends. One can struggle alone with many soldiers for some time, but not for all time. The living entity within the body can struggle up to the limit of 100 years with good luck. But after that, it is not possible to prolong the struggle. Thus, the living entity submits and falls victim. In this regard, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is sung, Vrita Kala Alo Sabha Sukha Bhagala. When one becomes old, it becomes impossible to enjoy material happiness. Generally, people think that religion and piety come at the end of life. And at this time, one generally becomes meditative and takes to some so-called yogic process to relax in the name of meditation. Meditation, however, is simply a farce for those who have enjoyed life and sense gratification. as described in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita meditation, Jhana Dharana, is a difficult subject matter that one has to learn from his very youth. To meditate, one must restrain himself from all kinds of sense gratification. Unfortunately, meditation has now become a fashion for those who are overly addicted to sensual things. Such meditation is defeated by the struggle for existence. Sometimes such meditative processes pass for transcendental meditation. King Paranjana, the living entity, being thus victimized by the hard struggle for existence, took to transcendental meditation with his friends and relatives. It's interesting. Okay, so... Om Ganatya Miranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tosmai Shigurave Namaha. So, it's interesting that in this particular purport, transcendental meditation is not capitalized. Although Prabhupada is indirectly or even directly referring to a process that was there in the 1960s, which was called, maybe it's still there now, that was called transcendental meditation. By, I forget it. I'm not going to mention it. I know the name, I'm not going to mention. M-M-Y. Just give the initials. Anyway, and they were actually teaching, even though it was called transcendental meditation, or is called transcendental meditation, they were charging for mantras. In those days, it was $35, I remember, for a mantra. And later on, with inflation, it became more expensive, and they enhanced some of the practices that they had. First of all, they had the secret mantra that they had, and they would charge for the mantra, and you're not allowed to tell anybody your mantra. Of course, basically, there were only two or three mantras. There's Iam and Clam and different things. Seed mantras, yeah. The Gayatri mantras, Iam and Clam. And because of everyone mentioned that they got the same mantra that basically everybody else got, you know, one or two or three mantras, then people would feel cheated, so that's why he had to keep secret about it. It's almost like the emperor's new clothes type of thing. So eventually they branched off into other areas like levitation seminars. You know how to levitate. You levitate, you mean just rise above the ground. And they were charging for that, and they showed some videos of people bouncing on beds or other bouncy substances like trampolines. You know, I could levitate on a trampoline. And anyway, this was quite a lucrative business. And I think it's probably still going on now. And they also have some Ayurvedic clinics and things like that. So the Prabhupada is indirectly or referring to that. Because if it was direct reference, it would be a capitalization of the T and the M. But... Actually, the word transcendental means to transcend this material world. That's simply to make an adjustment within this world. So today, of course, we find, practically speaking, a lot more yoga and a lot more sophisticated types of yoga, let's say yoga in quotes, being taught in different places. And it's interesting how people can misinterpret the Yoga Sutras for their own purposes. And Patanjali is very, very, Patanjali, of course, is the author of the Yoga Sutras. He's very, very explicit that the purpose of yoga, well, first of all, is to control the vritti, the turning of the mind, like the, pervert, invert, we have the same words in English, revert, subvert. And that's the purpose, and the purpose is ultimately to worship Ishvara. Ishvara means the Supreme Personality of God. It's not a personal name, just like we have primary and secondary names for God, or for Krishna. Forget about God. God is a secondary name, obviously, and Krishna is a primary name. Gopal is a primary name. Govardhanadhari is a primary name, which deals with his activities and his qualities and things like that. These are all primary names. And secondary names deal with his position, basically the position like God, Paramatma. Even the word Narayan can be understood as a secondary name because it means the resting place for Nara, all the living entities. So the primary name is Krishna, and many names related with that. So the word Ishvara, of course, means controller. So Patanjali was definitely teaching a God-centered system. And we are very fortunate that we have the association of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and it was presented the whole Vedic conclusion in a very clear fashion without clouding it over with some personally motivated, impersonal understanding. Just like this verse here that Prabhupada quotes from the Bhagavad Gita in the previous purport, Jayate Mriyate. I mean, it's very explicit about the soul. And we find that basically those people who study yoga, they hardly even know this particular thing. And this verse doesn't even give the essential qualities of the soul. Generally, this verse is describing Jayate Mriyate Vakadachan, a negative description of the soul. I mean, there's some positive aspects there. You know, negative means there's never birth or death. That's a negative description. That's not a positive description. He never ceases to be. He's unborn. This is all negative stuff. And of course, there's some positive descriptions here, like eternal, ever existing, and then another negative one, undying. And primeval, that means he's there all the time. He's the primeval. Primeval is an interesting word. You know, that means it's like the foundation or something like that. Anyway, so there's positive and negative words here, but they don't really get into the most important essential characteristics of the soul in this particular verse. But even so, we find most people who study yoga nowadays, they don't even understand these qualities, you know, the basic qualities. But the most important quality of the soul for us is jivera svarupa hoy, nitya Krishna das, that the soul is an eternal servant of God, because that's the actual identity. I mean, you can't really relate. At least I can't relate to the point I'm primeval, maybe evil, but not primeval. But I can't relate to the point that I'm primeval, or even the negative definitions, I'm unborn, eternal, or even the metaphorical descriptions of the soul, like vasamsi jirnani yata vihaya, just like the person takes off old clothes and puts on new ones in the same way the soul takes on a new material body and gives up the old and useless ones. I mean, it's hard for me to relate to that in a practical... I mean, I understand it, yes, theoretically. Obviously, I understand it. You know, the soul's eternal. Okay. But, you know, basically, what do you do about it? I can't just think, you know, I am that I am. I mean, that's another famous mantra. I am that I am. Tatvamasi, you are that is. You know, that's a... You know, just like when Lord Chaitanya was talking about the basic, most important mantras in the Vedic literature, you know, the Mayavadis, they would say, Tatvamasi is a basic mantra. And Lord Chaitanya considered the Pranava Omkara to be most important. And of course, the Omkara refers to Radha and Krishna. It's not simply an impersonal, even though most people understand it as being something impersonal you have to merge into, but it's Radha, Krishna, and the living entity, A-U-N-M. So it's when you think about these qualities of the soul. Of course, this is just basic second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Before you get it, second chapter is the contents of the Gita summarized, and the first six chapters generally they deal with the karma yoga aspect, and the last six chapters they deal with jnana yoga, and the middle six chapters they deal with what? Does anyone know? Bhakti. Yeah, so bhakti. especially the 12th chapter, which is devotional service. So basically, it's hard to relate to just these particular descriptions insofar as making a change in your life or guiding your life. You need something far more, let's say, personal. And that's why, even if they do it in the yoga practices or yoga schools, understand these things, they don't make changes in their lives. Because they haven't gotten to the point of like Manmana Bhava Madbhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru or Mamivam Sajivaloke Jiva Bhutta Sanatana. I mean, these are actually much more important descriptions. Obviously the soul is eternal, but much more important is to understand the ontological position of the soul in terms of being part and parcel of Krishna, Amsa. You know, that's my position. I'm part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavam Purusham Shashrutam Yadivyam Adidevam Adham Vibhu. It's important to understand Krishna's position, our position, and those are things that can actually instigate or instill or inspire you to change your life or to focus your life. But still, even all those descriptions, they're all sambandha. In other words, they're just basic descriptions of the relationships of the ontological positions. But to go further, we need descriptions called the Abhideya descriptions. You know, what you're supposed to do about the whole thing. Abhideya means practical engagement in devotional service, whether it's sadhana bhakti, that is, sadhana is comprised of vaidhi and raganuga, or it is bhava bhakti, or finally, you know, prema bhakti. Of course, prema bhakti is prayojana, or the goal. So basically, the point I'm making is that we're so fortunate that Prabhupada, I mean, without Prabhupada, we'd be lost in this yoga confusion that everybody else is lost in, that not understanding what the purpose is, you know, just basically floating, having a good time, you know, trying to just try to connect in an impersonal way with your inner essence, which basically I can't understand what it is. And it's just like a modern version of the 1960s. We were talking with people last night about this. I wasn't saying this, but I was appreciating that the yoga that's taught today is like a modern version of the 1960s understanding. It's like, you know, more sophisticated hippies, basically. And in the 1960s, we were unsophisticated hippies. I mean, it's just like, be here now, you know, love, all you need is love. We didn't have so much sophisticated nomenclature. It was just like, you know, love, you know, painting your faces and all those other nice things in the 60s. But nowadays, they have much more sophistication, but it's the same thing. It's the facade on exactly the same thing. Sophistication and erudition about these things. So somehow or other, you know, it's our duty to present Prabhupada and understand Prabhupada's teachings in this regard. And it's a big challenge, because when people are educated improperly or impersonally, it's harder to bring them to the devotional standard. Like Prabhupada gave the example that if someone taught themselves how to play the piano, it's harder to teach them properly how to play the piano. First of all, they have to understand they don't know how to play the piano before you can actually teach them, because teaching, they've learned the wrong way. So it's a great challenge, and it's very hard. Very hard, because people think that they know it already, and that we're just another group. And even our group, you know, we're just, you know, we have this belief in God, which is just like something that's extremely primitive, according to their particular perspective. You know, that was something that went out in the 1950s, with at the same time as Father Knows Best went out, and then, you know, at the same time you had the touchy-feely normal American families and everything like that, and marriage. At the same time, marriage went out, and Father Knows Best went out. and all those other things went out. And the same thing, you know, God, you know, it's primitive. Because I've been at these seminars, especially the NBC seminars, and I have to be very careful about the G word. You know, I can mention Krishna, you know, but, you know, if you get too much into it, you know, that Krishna's a Purusha, he's male or something like that. And then, of course, you can mention that the Supreme Absolute has a male and female aspect. There's different things you can get into like that. But to mention God is just like, wow, there's a person. So impersonalism has become much more, the point I'm making is impersonalism has become much more sophisticated in the Western world and much more ingrained in the consciousness of the educated people. Not only as we were talking about the other day through, you know, because with anthropology and archaeology and science, but also in the so-called study of theology. Or spirituality, as they say nowadays, rather than religion, is called spirituality. So it's a major challenge for us to bring. And people are even chanting Hare Krishna, but in an impersonal way. I mean, it's so prominent now, isn't it? There's so many bhajan groups, and they're chanting Hare Krishna, but their intention is not to love Krishna. Their intention is just to go with the flow, basically, or to, you know. I don't think they're so sophisticated. Most of them are trying to merge into Krishna. I think it's just basically go with the flow, you know, enjoy the spiritual energy. I think that's the main point. You know, so there's people chanting. So we got people doing things externally that are very similar to what we're doing. But the intention is completely different. The understanding is completely different. So how to do this is one of the main challenges we have. It was far easier. It was far easier in the 1960s. I tell you that. Much, much easier. People were much, much more innocent in that regard. So, anyway, so these are some of the points we can get from this. So, to become enthused, we have to know more than just the negative qualities of the soul or the eternal nature of the soul. We have to understand the soul's constitutional function as a servant of Krishna, and that's what we're trying to teach to everybody. So any questions or comments about any of these points? Yeah. Working now.
And a lot of the people I met in Russia are now in
Baba. No, it's, now it's not.
He was like super philosophical and he had studied in Golden. It seems that in Russia they're like attracting an intelligent class of people. And is that because, you know, they went through so much with the.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, they haven't been. Well, first of all, that Russia just opened up. I mean, not just. It was like 15, 20 years ago. And, they're just tasting freedom for the first time. We got to do something about this. Russia just opened up, they're tasting freedom, and there's not as much, let's say, competition in the yoga field as we have here. There's some, but it's not as much. And people have not become overly sophisticated. And there's still a natural attraction for God there. It's not the microphone, it's some connection there. Try figuring out. It always happens just in class. It's like we're getting a message from God. Huh. That's better. It's off. Anyway, I'll try to speak even with it making all that noise. So it's not considered bad to believe in God in these countries. It's actually considered very, you know, respectable. Whereas in America, amongst the intelligentsia, if you start talking about God, it's just like you're primitive. According to the theory of evolution, we're supposed to outgrow that particular stage in our natural development, the belief in the Supreme Personality of God itself. Hare Krishna. Wish there was something we could do about this. All right, any other questions?
I better just turn it off instead of deal with that noise.
Yeah. That's better. Hare Krishna. Yeah, that's good. Okay. Okay, everybody can hear me anyway. All right, any other questions?
Back here.
Yeah. It's a challenge. It's a challenge, and we have to... Well, the most successful devotees who are preaching in the Western world are doing something called bridge preaching, at least for the Western congregation. I mean, for the Indian congregation, obviously, it's a different style of preaching. But the bridge preaching is that it's basically in like a pen, out like a plow, as Srila Prabhupada described. That you make friends with people, you give them prasadam, because prasadam is purifying. Even if people don't know about it, you know, prasadam will purify them. And you allow them to hear the holy names from Srila Prabhupada or one of Srila Prabhupada's followers who are chanting purely. Because if they hear the holy names from someone who is not Krishna conscious, it actually has no spiritual effect to it at all. Because the holy names are not something that is vibrated just with the mundane mouth and tongue. So somehow or other you let them hear the holy names from someone who is following strictly or from Srila Prabhupada, and you engage them like that even without, you know, forcing them to understand that there's such a thing as God. And eventually by the association of the devotees their lives can be transformed. We're talking about the, you know, intelligent class of atheistic people in America. You can't just go out and just defeat them. I mean, you could, but it's not going to be effective. Prabhupada said that it's not going to work. I mean, I even saw during the 1960s, I was with Sri Dayananda Maharaj, and he defeated Professor Stahl. Yeah, I don't know if any of you have heard of Professor Stahl, but he's, you know, a famous Indologist, Sanskritist. So I was with him, and he just, like, whipped him to pieces. But it's not that Professor Stahl just paid his obeisances and said, please accept my obeisances, I accept you as my guru. It's not like when Lord Chaitanya was having a discussion with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya tried to instruct Lord Chaitanya in the Vedanta Sutra for about 7 days. And after 7 days, he said to Lord Chaitanya, you've not said anything. Have you understood what I've said? And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I don't understand anything you said, but I do understand the Vedanta Sutra. And then Lord Chaitanya proceeded to instruct Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya about the Vedanta Sutra, and then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya surrendered to Lord Chaitanya. He composed these amazing verses like Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Shiksharta Eka Purusha Purana Shri Krishna Chaitanya Shavira Dari Kripam Budhir Yastvam Aham Prapadye, which means that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has now descended in this Kali Yuga to teach renunciation and knowledge of his devotional service. Nija Bhakti Yoga. And this is his teaching, Shiksharta Eka Purusha. He's the original person. Purusha Purana, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dari. He's assumed the particular manifestation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and I'm surrendering that to him. Kripam Buddhi Yastvam Aham Prapadye. So he surrendered immediately. But nowadays, if you defeat someone philosophically, which is quite easy to do, then they're not going to surrender immediately. They're just going to think you're bigoted, you're opinionated. I mean, these are all negative designations for people who preach heavy. It's like we're pretty sick in America of the born-again preachers who say, you know, you have to believe and you'll be saved, or this is the way, the truth, and the light. You know, these people are just sick of that stuff. So if we do the same thing, even utilizing our expertise in philosophy and logic and reason, then people are not going to surrender. They're just going to become angry and bitter. It just doesn't work like that anymore. I mean, in the 1960s, basically you could do stuff like that. I mean, I remember doing that. Not, of course, I tried it with my mother and father and it didn't work, but I remember doing that with people of the same age. You know, I would just speak to them and say, you know, they present their objections and personal objections, and I'd say, no, this is illogical. If we have a hand, if we have eyes, if we have ears, the source from which we came, the original source, must have all these things and more. I mean, logical. And they said, yeah, you're right. You're right. You Krishna devotees are really good. But I don't find people responding like that nowadays. That if you just present them, they just get angry, they come up with more word jugglery. And they all have, they're little gurus, you know. And I'm using that word purposely, little gurus. I mean, even though they may be tall. I mean, they all have their little gurus, and the gurus teach them all this bogus thing using word jugglery. You know, practically most of the, let's say, a lot of the intelligent, you know, New Ager people, they all have gurus. In the old days, it wasn't like that. I mean, best was that same person who taught transcendental meditation, but it wasn't something so sophisticated. So now presentations of impersonal philosophy have become more sophisticated, much more sophisticated. And some of them have studied Sanskrit, and then they can juggle words in Sanskrit. And they're older, too, you know. Of course, I don't want to say his name. He was old, too. So we're up against a more formidable type of opposition. I don't want to say enemy, but a more formidable type of opposition. Much more sophisticated opposition than it was in the 1960s. So it requires a lot of subterfuge. I don't know if you understand subterfuge. That means a lot of trickiness, basically. That, you know, you give people prasad, you make, and then people get a higher taste. You know, then they lose their desire for just floating in the ether or merging in the absolute or whatever, because they understand it. Because once someone cannot understand the philosophy until they get purified anyway. It's not possible to understand the Krishna conscious philosophy unless you're purified. And so the process of purification has to be there, and the process is taking prasadam, associating with the devotees, or associating with someone who's chanting the holy name, the Shuddha Nama, instead of something that's just like Nama Bhash or even Nama Parada. I mean, most of them are chanting not only Nama Bhash, but they're chanting the offensive name of the Lord. Not name of the Lord, not even the name of the Lord, but Nama Parada. They're chanting with offense to merge into the Lord, to decry the existence of the Lord, to decry that Krishna has any senses. So it has adverse effects, the chanting. So we're fighting against something or dealing with something that's actually far more difficult at this point. And that's our challenge, at least with the Westerners. With the Indians, it's a different challenge. You know, there's the demigod worship and the rituals and all those other things that we have to deal with the Indians. So there's challenges in both directions. And some devotees, you know, because they couldn't deal with the challenges, they just concentrate all their preaching activity in Eastern Europe. Something like that, or because there's more success there. You know, you can be pretty successful in Eastern Europe because it's not a real challenging environment for preaching Krishna consciousness. Or in Mexico, it's not very challenging. Of course, Mexico, the challenging thing is to keep people in devotees. And also in Eastern Europe, same thing. Because there's not so much philosophical sophistication. So to keep people as devotees year after year for their whole lives is a very big challenge in those countries. So there's different challenges. Okay, all glorious to you is divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Ki Jai.